Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is the Scummy Mummies podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Scummy Mummies podcast. I'm Helen Thorne.
I'm Ellie Gibson.
And do you know what, Ellie?
Yes, I do know what. But go on, say it anyway.
I'll say it anyway for the listener. It's Richard Herring's on the podcast.
Yay. It's Richard Herring's? I love Richard Herring's.
I can't believe it.
Oh, he's my favourite member of the Herring's family.
Excellent. This guy that's sitting with us for free is a comedian, a podcaster, an author and a dad.
Yes.
Let's go.
I like that you specified it was free, just to be clear to Richard. At the top of the podcast, there will be no fee for this appearance.
Just turn my phone off, but I'll turn it back on and call my agents. The hell is this?
Yes. How are you, Richard? We join you in your dressing room.
Yes. Mm. Just before I'm doing my penultimate recording of Leicester Square Theatre, which is Leicester Square Theatre podcast today as we're recording this. So I'm in my, is it hot in here or is it just me?
Yes, it's always fucking hot.
It's too hot. And,
or too cold.
A bit tired, but I'm okay.
You're going to be all right.
Yeah.
We'll get through this.
I think I'll be fine.
It's just, all it is 40 minutes of me and a loud Australian. What could possibly go wrong?
Sounds like a great time. I think you should have paid us to be here, Ellie, honestly.
Yeah, okay. So let's kick off. Richard Herring's, tell us about your family.
My family, I have a wife and two small children. I've got a 3.5-year-old. Well, she's approaching 4 already now. And a 1-year-old, he's just 13 months now, I think he is.
Oh.
It's been quite a hellish year of the second child.
That's what I was always told. I've got an older brother, and he said, the hardest 3 years of my life were the first 3 years of the second child.
Yes.
So basically, your life's going to be shit for another 2 years, Richard.
Yeah,
that's what we're saying.
It's been difficult. It's been surprisingly difficult. I don't know whether... He's lovely, but
he's lovely, but...
I prefer the other one. I prefer just having one.
Yes, no,
it's very difficult being the second one because the old one's much more interesting, obviously, and does stuff and sits down.
Yeah.
And all you're doing with him is... And he's a very cheerful but boisterous and won't stand still. He's walking now.
Yeah.
Don't sit still. And if you put him in anything, he tries to get out head first. You know.
So
if he's in a high chair and you leave him, you come back and you find him dangling out of the high chair.
Yeah.
And you go, he's going to kill himself. Great.
Just got the constant eye twitch and the fear. I had a girl first, and it's really similar, like 2.5 years gap. And we're like, oh, we know how to do kids. She's lovely. She just draws and does puzzles. And the boy came and was like, I'm going to destroy this house. I'm going to destroy your marriage. Ah! And then we eventually loved him. So that
he loves his new family.
So it's been a tough year.
Yeah.
Just of tiredness. He didn't sleep as well. He's sleeping a bit better now. But yeah, it's just... it's a strain, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really... It's a real mix of just, like...
This.
Complete rage and madness. And then weird, like, tear-jerkingly extreme love. That's fucking knackering. And you're not young.
So Helen writes the manual.
I patronisingly put my hand on his shoulder as well. You're very old.
Just going to read you out the second line on the running order. Let's be honest, you're not a young dad. She might as well have gone, Richard, you're fucking old.
I am old.
What's that like?
I am old. So it's
not to look at you, it's just that I've seen posters and you did announce quite publicly you were 50.
Yes, I'm 51. I'm 51.
What are you talking about? I've seen posters. And unlike most humans, you have aged over the years, Richard. What happened? What went wrong?
Tell me through.
It is true that I've left it a little late, both for love and for family. But I'm not sure. I think there's lots of advantages to it. I'm very glad I didn't have kids when I was in my 20s.
No,
because
I think
it wouldn't really have worked with who I was and where I was, and I don't think I could have been a great dad. I really want to have kids now, and I'm mainly delighted to have them, despite the exhaustion. So I think you're more involved, I think, than I might have been. And it sort of does mainly keep you young, apart from the bits where it makes you feel very, very old.
Yes, exactly. It's just the getting out of bed thing, where you're like, oh, I've got to go do this all again. Yeah. It's like Groundhog Day, just like,
it is, yes. It is. So, I was waking up at 6 o'clock anyway, because I'm getting old, and so, like, I might as well wake up at 6 o'clock and change your shitty nappy, mightn't I?
Yeah. Why not?
And do a pee. Yeah, we've all been there. But because as we said, just to be clear, you're not a young dad. I don't know if we've mentioned that, so just to reiterate that.
He's very old.
Yes. There are older dads.
There are, aren't they?
Yeah, so did you sort of see then your mates kind of having kids, and like, when did you look at that and kind of go, oh, is they're making heavy weather of this, I'll nail this?
No, I mean, I didn't really talk to my friends very much about it. A lot of my friends have left it quite late. Some of them, I've got a couple of friends who've got like now 18-year-olds or 19-year-olds, so that's kind of weird. But they were, I don't know how involved they were as dads. I always thought I'd be quite a good dad, and I think I am quite a good dad, but the thing that surprised me is that you sort of assume kids will just love you.
Yeah.
Because you're there.
I'm here, aren't I?
And my daughter is very, you know, makes it very hard to be affectionate. She gives out affection very lightly, you know.
Oh,
not
okay.
very the opposite of lightly.
Yeah.
You know, the other day we were walking along and she said, "Do you want to hold my hand, Daddy? We're on a walk, and I think partly because she was worried she might fall over. And I thought, you know, but it's like once every 6 months I get like a hug.
A little crumb.
Or, you know, if I kiss, she goes, "Get off me on that!" Whereas my son is too young to reject me.
All that to
look. So he gets lots of kisses.
Oh, he can't crawl away fast.
So, when I was a kid, I always wanted to have kids. I was the youngest kid by my brother and sister, were like 5 years older than me, 5 or 6 years older than me. And I thought, you know, I always wanted a baby brother or baby sister.
Yeah.
And I remember being at school when I was 14 saying, I want kids because it's you carrying on your line and all that. And all my friends looking at me like I was mental.
Yeah.
It's interesting because I talk about this sometimes with some, you know, like sometimes I have a guest on this. I think Richard Osman's got grown up kids and is about the same age as me.
Yeah.
You know, and you sort of think, well, actually, is it quite good to not? I think of all the time I wasted my 20s and 30s and all the time I was lonely and sad and, you know. And actually, to get through that, be divorced, and
nice.
Then single again in your 50s, you can have the time of your life because you've done it all, and then you're not looking for anyone to have a family with.
That's the dream.
So, so it might be better to wait till you're rich. I'm really mainly thinking Richard Osman here.
He does wear a nice suit.
He's tall and rich, and your kid's growing up and you're single.
Maybe he just wag his willy wherever you like.
The man's drowning in badge, we all know. Absolutely drowning in it.
I think he's got a girlfriend now.
Oh, wow. That's what he said to me.
Anyway. let's get into the comedy chat.
Yes, okay, we've done the family chat.
I'm going to read you some more gems from Helen's running order, word for word. Richard Herrings. You've been doing this comedy stuff for a few years now.
Yes, because that's how I got old.
The research is coming through. Yeah. I really can see it.
I'm sure everyone I'm sure everyone asks you about your most favourite show or moment. But what have been your favourite moment on stage?
Right.
Everyone asks you, so I'm going to ask you again. I'm not even going to bother to get the plurals right in the fucking question.
Well, you used up a lot of the S's in my name, so... my favourite moment was because I started out doing stand up and writing and with Stuart obviously and doing, and then we sort of formed into double act, and I didn't really enjoy doing stuff on my own. I felt better working with other people, and the TV shows we did were kind of a group thing and sketches and double act rather than stand up. And so I think the moment when I did a show called Christ on the Bike in after Lee and Herring had broken up or had been forced to stop by the BBC not giving us any more work. And I was really nervous about doing a show on my own. It was more of a theatre show, but it was all sort of stand-up-ish. And there was a bit in that, which is this... I do, like, quite a long routine about the first page of the Gospel According to Matthew, which is all the begat, 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 begat thing, but I've learnt it and then get angry about it. And I think there was when I first did Edinburgh, and it'd been a little bit rocky getting there, and I got there and people were coming, and there was a bit in the routine where I would look in the audience and the audience were like rocking their heads, rocking back with laughter, and I was also knew that the really funny bit of the routine hadn't come yet, and this hardly ever happens, does it?
Yeah,
as a comedian,
yeah.
A, where people are rocking their heads with laughter, and B, and just the power of that, because I suddenly realised that the power of being a solo performer and why so many solo performers go insane, because if you feel like a god if you get an audience like that, but just having an audience in the palm of your hand that much and them crying with laughter and pain from laughing and knowing that the real punchline of the routine is yet still to come, you know, because in that show I had like a stand. I had a like mic in a stand because it felt like a stand-up show. But I had a lapel mic on as well, which was what was actually recording the sound, and that mic wasn't on. And I just basically clung to it, like, because I was so scared about performing on my own. So it was a big pivotal moment in my career. You know, obviously the double act feels like a significant part of my career, but it's actually 20 years ago, and it's only, even if you take that, you know, it's only a third of my career, that part of my career. So it's sort of interesting that was the moment, I think, that sort of meant the most to me, I think. Yeah,
so you must be sick of talking about the double act, so let's talk about the double act.
People don't talk about that much anymore, so I don't know.
let's fill 20 minutes then. Come on.
Yeah. Well, most people don't remember it, so it's not really, you know, it's so long ago. I meet people at gigs and they look to me so young and they go, oh, I used to love This Morning with Richard on Judy, usually, because that was on in the daytime, and you go, but you can't have seen, but they were watching it, they were 9 years old, you know, when their parents were at church, or no one was expecting something so subversive, to be honest with you. And so, like, we had
banana
this
man, all you guys.
Yeah. So we really, you know, got this generation of young kids who became sort of obsessed. We've indoctrinated them all.
I still have the Fist of Fun book. It's still one of my most treasured presents. The page about badminton still makes me laugh.
Oh, that's nice. Well, we did. We worked really, really hard as that double act, and we wrote loads and loads of material. And we wanted to make that book really good. But you know, there were so many cash-in comedy books you'd get that were just pictures of everyone and no content and or just repeated content, but yeah, so we worked pretty hard. We worked very hard on everything. Stupidly hard.
Well, I guess we'd like to ask your advice, really.
Yeah,
wouldn't we? Like, how? What?
Because we've been together for 5 years.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, and like, we started off actually doing the podcast, and then we did the live show, and then off that we wrote a book and all this sort of stuff, and now we're, you know,
sleeping together.
Yeah. And basically, there's three in our marriage now. Yeah. So, Ellie and I have opened up a joint account. You know, like,
which one of us is Camilla Parker Bowles? I really hope it's not me. I'd take one of the other ones.
I think it's difficult, but I think some double acts just seem to. You know, some double acts get on with each other their whole life. Ant and Dec seem to be very friendly throughout everything, and some people, you know, with me and Stu, we didn't get together thinking we're going to work together for 10 years.
Yeah,
we were quite different. We were really young as well, and both kind of ambitious in different ways. And Stu suddenly wanted really to do stand up even before we started doing the double act.
Yeah,
and was doing the stand up all the time. So there was always like pulling apart a little bit. We're friendly, remain mainly friendly. I don't really see him very much anymore. So I think just being communication and honesty. The stuff I did with Andrew Collins, which was my
sorry,
it's all right.
Are you delivering food?
Give me some food. Just breathe. Well, don't stand there and make it worse. Thank you very much.
What's he got?
Oh, he's got Leon.
I've got an alumi sandwich.
Oh, hang on.
I already spilt one of those last 2 weeks ago. And so, yeah, with me and Andrew, we're getting on pretty well. And then we did this podcast for 3 or 4 years. And then he sort of took this job. We were doing a radio show together. And then he took on the radio show without me with someone else. So it didn't really just... didn't really discuss it with me, and I would have got over it, but it was sort of like it was just a weird thing to do. I think out of his embarrassment or his need, you know, I think he was worried about his you know, how he's making money and all this sort of stuff, and as well, you know, but it also the danger is, you know, in that double act I was a sort of slightly bullying force in the double act, and I think, you know, I don't know whether it sort of spilt over into real life a little bit or whatever. So, you know, I think that lack of communication, though, both ways, he should have said, look, I'm not happy with the way this is going. Or he should have said, you know, also, if he'd just come and said, look, I'm going to do this thing, I would have said to him, don't do it, because it's a mistake for you to do this, which it was. I knew it was, and it was, and he did it for 4 weeks.
Maybe he sort of secretly knew as well.
Well, he was really dependent on the work with the channel that we were working with, and he thought, you know, but they were basically using him as this dog's body to come in and do stuff whenever they needed someone, and it was clear that they were going to dump him as well. So we were just getting to a point where, and that's why, you know, that's why I started doing this Leicester Square, when we were doing a double act to get a podcast together, and then that ended, and then I thought, well, I'll just maybe I can do it with other, you know, talking to a different person every week. The difficulty is just intense, and you know, and with me and Stu, we were working together, we were in each other's pockets for 10 years,
yeah,
and we came together because we had a very similar sense of humour, though quite a different way of approaching it, but we really made each other laugh, and we had really similar and interesting ideas, and we sparked off each other really well, I think.
Yeah.
But then, you know, then you weren't thinking, and then we'll be living in a house together, and then we'll be working together every day.
Oh, so you're living together as well?
When we moved to London, we lived in the same house for a year and a half, I think, before.
That's a lot. Yeah.
And then, but then even when we weren't living together, we were seeing each other 6 days a week, probably writing nearly all the time, and then, you know, and touring together and travelling together. And he was, you know, pulling off in one direction, and I was sort of trying to go, well, look, we put so much work into this, it'd be crazy to stop doing this. And, it, you know, it ended because the BBC didn't give us another series. And
a day where you sat down and went, right,
no,
I've had enough.
I think we worked very well together, but I think it was also really good for us to go off and be able to do our own thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've both managed to make a certain degree of success in as solo acts as well. So, you know, I mean, I think things happen at the right times. You know, if it's not working out, there's no point in.
But the key is, as you say, communication and honesty, isn't it? So, Helen, it's about time we had a chat. I'm sorry to do this in front of you, Richard.
Now,
I know you're about to do a show, I think it helps to have a third party.
Oh, absolutely. It makes it less weird. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
First of all, you owe me £8 from that kebab last week.
Right.
Yeah, because
it seems to me female comedians are much better at it than.
Do you think
about
so?
Double acts. Yeah, because I think it's much more like a friend thing, and I think with men. Not, I mean, me and Stu are like the least manly men in the world, but there's an element of competitiveness, I think, in men that you're still, as much as you're together, you're still trying to outdo each other.
Trying to be the top dog.
Right, you know, and within the double X I've worked in, I've kind of wanted to go, why, you know, why would you do that? This is a thing that's moving together. It benefits us both if we're not competing. But I think there's still a competitive element to myself, you know, and especially when you're younger.
Yeah, it was really interesting. Like, Pete, Ellie's husband, said to me, you've made our marriage better. I'm basically blowing smoke up my own ass. But I think I'm a better person with my own husband because I... Now I'm going to sound really weird. I was like, I feel fulfilled in another way. And then I can, you know, I'll be nice to him. But it is really nice having... Like, I think we work out things really well. I'm like, oh, actually, that's a nicer way of saying that to that person, other than saying, fucking hell, why haven't you put the bins out? I've become a better negotiator, and I don't know what I'm going with this.
Better human.
I'm basically saying, that's what I'm saying.
All relations are difficult on this. So it's difficult. And it's difficult being in a partnership with someone that you're romantically involved with, and then who you become a parent with, which is a very different job than what you start out as.
What are you talking about? Having kids has done wonders for us. Oh, our sex life is absolutely off the hook.
Could not love him more. Really.
Yes. So never bonded. A cross word.
So much energy for each other. Yes.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Anyway,
let's do a game, Helen.
Yes, and it's called
Mystery or Skill, Industrial or Aztec Zone. Let's find out.
It's called Did Our Husbands Really Do That?
Okay.
Okay, so we're going to list some things our husbands have done, and you have to guess whether they've done it or not.
Okay.
Okay.
Now, Richard Herring's, did my husband write in a birthday card? And it started like this. These are the five things I love about you, but then only wrote two things.
It's got to be true.
It is true.
It's got to be true.
Yeah, yeah, very
good. And not only that, what did he, how did he explain that to you? He didn't say I've ran out of time or I lost my pen ran out.
Think of anything else. Didn't even start a new card. Anyway.
So when you're doing that, just put these are the, and leave that blank, reasons then, I love you, and then work out how many reasons.
Yeah, little,
And these are the two reasons I love you.
If you're listening, husband, yes.
Did my husband really do this? Mow half the lawn.
Well, I mean, I'd have thought so. I started mowing the lawn, and we got a very tiny lawn, but it was growing quite a lot. And I started strimming it. It was a bit wet, and it was just going into the strimmer, so I stopped. So I did literally that much, which is like, you know, for the people at home, maybe a metre.
Oh, nice. Nice
of
touch.
The garden, and then left the rest. So I think your husband did.
Why did you do that?
Because it was too difficult to
it's
get...
It was too difficult. Do you know what? The number of times I've had the conversation with my husband, why did you do that? Because it was too difficult.
Couldn't work out. They sort of assume with tools that you'll have a certain level of understanding of them. So, it was all clogging up the thing with wet grass. So I thought I'd wait till it's dry. And B, I'd got a sort of bald patch in the garden. So I was experimenting with the climate. Now we're just going to pay a man.
Would be thrilled.
We're going to pay a man £25 to come every 2 weeks to
that
do
is
it.
That is the correct thing to
do. Do you think there is this pressure on men to know how to, like, it's assumed that you know how to change a plug and put up shelves and mow the lawn?
Well,
and...
no one assumes it of me. I'm terrible. I can do, like, if I can do anything. My parents were around, and they've only been around at my new house once, and I was changing a light bulb, and my dad was going on a ladder, and my dad's going, oh, look, he's doing all right, he's changing a light. So literally, that's how low the expectation is. My wife just doesn't let me put flat pack stuff together because we just end up rowing. My daughter got this IKEA kitchen thing for Christmas, and I was really looking forward to putting it together as my Christmas thing.
Oh, you like it, yeah.
Well, I'd like to have done it just because it felt like this was
their
men.
And Daddy made this for
and
you.
And then she insisted on doing it with her brother in front of me, and I wasn't allowed to tell. Because she knew we'd argue with each other if we tried to do it together.
Oh, me and Pete once had, we bought two identical IKEA bookshelves, and he was like, yeah, you know, I'll do it. And I was like, I can do it just as well as you. In fact, let's have a race. And then it became apparent quite quickly that he was much better at it. So I hid three of the screws from his
packet. All right, should we continue the game?
Yes.
I was right, so he did do half the...
So the full story is he decided to start mowing the lawn 4 minutes before he had to pick up my son from school.
Yeah, it feels like you can do it in 4 minutes, but you can't.
You really can't. It's quite a big lawn, and that was 2 weeks ago, and the lawn remains unmowed. So now it's just like a sort of shit haircut.
It'll just grow the same length, won't it? And then he can do it all again.
Will it? Hey, you're the expert, Richard.
The bit that I made bald is it hasn't really grown back.
Oh.
And then the dog dug up a bit of it. We spent a lot of money getting some grass in.
So now it just looks like you've buried a body. You've dismembered someone.
I filled in the hole with some... with some compost, basically, because I couldn't find enough soil. Right. The soil was all over the place. I just got a bag of compost and put it in there, so it's the wrong colour.
Oh, that's a nice touch.
Good stuff.
Monty Don would be so thrilled.
Yes, yes.
That's how we do it. Okay, after my 40th birthday, we had a shag, and my husband, or did my husband say... Oh, my God, that's the first time I've fucked a 40-year-old woman.
Well,
which is good because we've been going out for 20 years.
Yeah, that's
so,
nice to know.
Yeah.
Could have been having sex with people in their 20s all that
time. Yeah, I know. I just thought that was a weird thing to say. Like, he was really proud. He's like, I fucked an old woman. I was like, yeah, congratulations. I mean,
See, my wife's a little younger than me as well.
Okay.
And so I think she... And when we got together, I was 40 and she was 27.
Yes.
And that seemed okay.
Mm-hmm.
But when I turned 50, she suddenly went, oh. like she hadn't realised that this was what
happened. Yeah, that you were just sort of like staying for it. And then she just catches up.
She was like, hey,
just evens out. That's how it works out.
And so I think she's realised.
She was like you. She was like, but on your posters, you look so young. I didn't know you would age, Richard Herring. What's going on?
So I think she's then realised, you know, I'll be 60 and she'll be still quite young and I'll be 70. She hasn't done the math, as they say.
And so, you know,
I think she's then. But I've got her now, there's no way out, is there? Yeah, rings on the finger.
Literally fucked it. Yeah.
So, I understand that.
Yeah.
I'm surprised you'd never have sex with a 40-year-old, though.
I know.
I had sex with a 42-year-old when I was 22, I think.
Was that good?
No, it was terrible.
I won't tell Will. You've got 2 more years, darling, and then it's awful.
I don't think she represents all 42-year-old women, though. And it was as much, that we were very drunk, I think, was the problem.
Yeah, that doesn't aid things.
No.
Well, I had high sex. Remember I told you that the other day? That was really nice. Anyway.
Really nice. You sounded quite young and groovy. That was really nice. Like you were talking about the bake-off fire.
Did my husband once say to me, don't worry, maybe in a few years you can have plastic surgery?
I don't think he did say that. Come on, there must be some that they didn't say.
Bearing in mind what over the course of this game.
I'm going to be compared to
him. It's a funny stretch that we've called a game. I think it's more therapy for
us. Is it just you saying a lot of things?
It's just us complaining.
And then we're going, yes, they have said that.
Yeah, setting off, basically. Yes, he did say that.
Okay.
Yeah. All right.
Well, you can have plastic surgery now.
I know, exactly right.
I mean,
exactly.
Not that you need it.
If you ever want to look like you did on those posters, maybe you should think about it. Okay? A little nip and tuck. Did my husband really say, I think there's a problem with the washing machine? And when I said, why is that, darling? Except obviously I wouldn't use the word darling. Did he say, because 3 of my pairs of jeans have shrunk? And I said, what do you mean shrunk? And he went, well, they're very tight around my middle. And did I genuinely have to explain to him? He was just drinking too much fucking Cronenberg.
I think that probably happened, yes.
That absolutely happened. Yes. Have you got anything you've said or done that you regret to your wife, Richard?
I mean, probably. She should have told me before and I could have made it longly. I mean, a lot of them are just too awful to say.
We'll get her on the podcast next, shall we?
Yeah, ask her about it. Yeah, no, I can't think of anything. You know, I think I'm pretty... She doesn't agree. I think I'm a pretty good husband. I think I work very hard for the family and at home. I love putting the bins out. I hear this from women all the time. I'm just obsessed with the bins and the dishwasher. You don't have to worry about any of that.
Wow.
Oh, but my husband is obsessed with the dishwasher to the point that if I've stacked the dishwasher, he will come and unstack the dishwasher and restack it correctly.
You've done it wrong.
Fucking hell.
Do you rinse? Are you a pre-rinse?
I sometimes do, but not always. Yeah.
Okay.
Do you rinse?
No.
Well, very good. It's called a dishwasher. That's what it does.
It goes in, it comes out, it gets put away nearly always. Sometimes I just put some of it in the draining rack, but nearly always.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty good at that. I'm looking forward to dying so that my wife then appreciates how much I did. That's the only way she's going to find out.
What do I do with this dishwasher?
The thing is, you know, women don't make it, because whatever you do, they'll complain about it. So you might as well do nothing. That's what most husbands realise.
Yeah.
You might as well not do any of this stuff because you're going to get it in the ear anyway. So that most men just go, I won't do anything. And then when they say, do the bins, I'll just do the bins, which I would have done anyway because bins are great.
It's a very quick win doing a bin, isn't it? You feel like you're Johnny Two Dicks.
I love having as many bins as possible, putting things in the right bin, putting the bins out at the right time, making sure that you're using as much of the bin line as possible, so that ecologically speaking, you know, it doesn't save much money, but like sometimes people if you've got like a carrier bag in a bin in one of the rooms and there's just a couple of things in it, they'll throw that whole thing away.
No.
And you go, no, well, either tip that into another bin. Oh,
Jesus.
The ghost
is so bored. A bin chat that he's just fucked off.
You know, make sure the plastic carry bag's full so you can put then you just put that in the outside bin.
If you want to do a podcast about bins,
we can do a podcast about bins.
We should.
Bins,
like,
when you said you've got a lot more time now, you're not touring anymore. this is what we're doing.
Do you have a food bin for the food?
Yes,
we do. Yeah, compost bin.
I love Lewisham that. I get all the crumbs and I'll put whatever crumbs are and I'll carry them across and put them in there, even if it's just like a tiny handful of crumbs. I love it.
How do you feel about Brabantia as a bin brand?
We did have one, and in the end, it was taking up too much room in the kitchen. And it wasn't. We had one of those because. When I first moved into the house, you obviously have a lot of rubbish when you first move in.
Yeah.
the bins were done basically done every 2 weeks on rotation, and they were getting too full. So I got one of those brand new ones that you're meant to be able to crush the rubbish Ooh. Down. It doesn't work though. It doesn't.
Right.
A, the bin liner comes off too much. B, it doesn't really. You can just crush it down effectively with your hand. I thought it was going to be like a
yeah.
some kind of vacuum in there that would seal it, but it's just.
Why you are not on Jonathan Ross every week no, talking about this? I just don't know.
I would like to know more.
Yeah. See.
But, oh, let me lead you to it. I've actually got a.
You have to listen to my stone clearing podcast next. That's what you have to do.
So you actually have done a podcast about.
I go around my local field. I'm doing my dog walk and take stones off the field. I'm trying to build a wall around the field. It's quite a big field.
Right? Wow. Is it anywhere near Mexico? Is it?
It could be an idea for Donald Trump. So that's my new podcast. Got to number 4 in the iTunes charts. So you know.
Ooh, wow.
So you
that's
know
better
that's
than us, yeah.
No, well,
don't waste your time with all this clever thinking and questions.
Shit, we're going to have to cancel that stone clearing podcast idea. Just cancel that. Let's just do the bin chat one.
No, yeah, it's much better. All right, well, I think that's the game done. I think Richard won. I think you're a good man, Richard.
I think, yes.
I know men.
Now it's time for the flogging your book section.
Yay! Flog your book. Okay.
Oh, is that the theme? It's your theme tune now.
Yeah.
That's what it is?
Yeah.
Just one note. Yeah. Good. All
right, flog your book.
Yeah, no, got it. Yeah.
All right, great. So what's your book called, Richard?
It's called Emergency Questions, 1001 Emergency Questions. I don't even know what it's called. Conversation starters or something, isn't it?
1001 conversation savers.
Savers for any occasion.
Every occasion.
For every occasion.
His publishers are going to be thrilled.
It's called Emergency Questions, really. So I've been doing this. Comes out of my podcast when I run out of things to say, which you guys don't seem to do.
Not with a running order like this.
I decided to come up with sort of stupid questions to just chuck in to fill the awkward silences. And then I realised people were using them in their real lives. And then I realised there was maybe a market for it. What works quite well in my podcast is that people obviously ask the same question. So I've been asked that question about being on, what's your favourite moment being on stage a million times. So I have an answer prepared for it. But no one's asked me, have you ever been in a canoe in an interview before?
Have people asked you about your bins?
Sometimes. They've not twice. I don't know if they've ever heard another interview with me. So, you know, sometimes the mundane ones are quite interesting, but the surreal ones, which kids are really good at. So sometimes parents will send me their kids' ones, and I'll go, yeah, that one's quite good. I would use that one. I don't generally. But adults will send me ones, and they're either trying too hard to be rude, or they're very hack ones that you've heard before.
Yeah.
Or they're just not. They don't work.
Yeah.
And it's a very weird. It's got to be enough for you to have an actual conversation about it.
Yeah.
Or to break down. Some of them are sort of deliberately designed just to stop the conversation. So I'll ask the guests on my podcast, have you ever seen a Bigfoot? Which is basically, you know, the answer to that one is no.
Yeah.
But the day. Well, Brian Blessed has seen a Bigfoot, but I asked him that question and he didn't talk about that.
And it's
how he had seen a Bigfoot.
Brian Blessed was walking past a very still lake, I would guess, and he looked down and they're staring up at him. Yes.
But, I'm quite good at coming up with these questions that are quite good, I think, for people to use generally. Mm. And people kind of emailing me and telling me they've been using them in emergency. Like someone who was in an earthquake in the Himalayas and they were waiting for, they didn't know if they were about to die, and they were waiting for the emergency service to come and rescue them.
And Richard Herring came to them.
They started asking each other these questions to pass the time, it passed the hour or so. It might have been a week they were doing it. It kind of kept them going. They work on dates, I think, and Tinder and stuff like that. You know, they're a bit more interesting than the questions that people generally ask in those situations.
Yeah.
So if you're on a date, you kind of all ask about each other's families, and which is fine.
Have you got any brothers or sisters?
Yeah, no one really cares about that.
No.
And so, like, to actually, you can just get to the nub of something by asking a weird question.
Yeah.
And if the person goes, well, that's weird, A, you can blame me because it's my question.
Yeah.
And B, you can go, oh, they're not that interesting a person because they can't cope with these sort of slightly off-the-wall questions.
It's a great tool to judge people.
It is.
Yeah.
And I think it's fun to play, you know, I think there's some very good books. Richard Osman's book we played last Christmas, me and my family, the World Cup of Things. I don't know if you've seen that. It's such fun to play there. And the Taskmaster book looks like a very good book. So my book's in the same sort of area as that you can, on Boxing Day, you can start tossing these questions to each other and to relatives. And some of them are a bit rude.
Yeah.
But there is a section for kids, and there is, you know, and if you're thinking ahead, you can look and say, will my Auntie Mabel want to be asked?
Has she sucked her own cock?
Has she sucked her own cock? She won't be asked that one. But there's some rude ones.
I think it's great. I think it's great for that party thing of, like, because I've got a friend who, for his part of his job, he had to go on like a mingling course.
Right.
Where you're taught how to mingle.
Wow.
And, like, you're taught how to introduce people. So you go, "Ah, Helen, this is Richard. He's a comedian who likes bins." "And this is Helen. Yeah. She's Australian, but not a racist." Something like that.
Okay, yeah,
you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you're also taught how to leave a conversation. And I was like, oh, like, how do you do that? You know that thing when you're at a party and you've said everything you've got to say.
And you've seen someone more interesting over there you want to talk to.
And he said, oh, well, you just go... Anyway, lovely to see you. Touch them on the arm if you know them well enough.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then you just go.
On the boob if you know them.
Yes.
Touch them on the boob.
It's over.
Levels of intimacy. There's levels. Yeah. Quick kiss on the ear.
Kiss on the ear.
Not on the lips. That's too much. Just got an ear.
I accidentally kissed my sister on the lips the other day and it was really odd.
Mm. Well, she's lesbian. She's probably...
That's what... Well, no, does it make it more weird that she's a leser?
Probably. I'll cut it out. Okay. I think that's offensive. I haven't really worked out how, but it feels wrong.
I know, she does listen to the podcast and then... It's a good poo book as well, I think. Like, you know, if you want to indulge, if you want to not take
your phone... Oh, we all know what you mean. We don't need to paint, the picture.
But then,
I don't want to picture it.
Yeah. But that, I like the question in your book that it said, when was the time that you, like, your worst fart? Like, what like, cleared the room? Yeah. What is your worst fart?
I mean, the worst fart I ever did was I was standing... I'd been at the theatre. I was a student. It was a student theatre place. Not quite nice. It was just like a long... corridor that went down to the bar and back up to the theatre, and everyone was queuing to go back into the theatre. And I did a fart that was silent but was so bad. I was vegetarian at the time. I was doing pulse-based pies.
Yeah.
It was so bad. I could have just fronted it out and go, oh. But it was like filled and, you know, one of those heavy farts that doesn't dissipate like that. and like acrid and stinging, and you were going, no, it's not, that's not even nice. and I just had to run to the toilet because I was so embarrassed. It was too late to run into the toilet.
Did anyone know it was you?
Yeah, and everyone, because I'd escaped.
You fled the scene!
I think I went, oh God, I'm sorry, and ran away. So I could have got away with it, but I think I did sort of fess up, but it was really...
I find my face getting very hot after I've done one, because I'm like going, no, no, it's me. Like, if we've done, you know, that awful phase. Yeah. But I
like your clap. Tell Richard Herrings about your clapping.
Oh my God, yes. I was talking to my neighbour. She happened to be like, you know, quite high up in the BBC, so I kind of wanted to impress her, you know, up-and-coming comedian. And I was talking to her, and then I just did a really loud fart. But while I was mid-conversation, like, I was farting and talking at the same time. So to cover it up, I just started clapping. I like, tried to incorporate it in, like, laughing, clapping, going, anyway... So raw. That was really terrible.
It's difficult to cope with, and everyone has done this at some point, so everyone should be understanding if you just say I'm sorry.
Oh, so just to refer back to the running order, Helen, you've written, "To be honest, hyphen, I was nervous writing the questions, hyphen, hoping they weren't shit."
Oh, there we go.
That's not even a question.
I just wanted to qualify the rest, because I was reading the blurb about Richard's book, and I have read some of it. I mean, skimmed it, but
it's not really something I had to sit down and read the whole thing from cover to cover to proofread it.
Yeah.
That's not something you want to do. I tell you, by the 700th question, I'd lost the will.
Yeah,
you want to dip in. I mean, you do a few and then you put it away and come back to it. But yeah, you don't want to sit down and read it. Because also, even if you are solo, which, as you say, you can sit on the toilet and do it, you're doing it to answer the questions yourself for yourself, I suppose.
Yeah.
And think about it. So, well, but it's too...
If you always poo on your own, it's a lifestyle choice.
But it's not a cover-to-cover book, I wouldn't say. Yeah.
Good stuff.
All right. Well, great. I think that's almost the podcast done, isn't it, Ellie? But we have to do the Scummy Mummy Confessions.
Yes. So this is sort of stories of parenting failure, Richard.
Okay. My wife had out of nowhere had a massive, like, one of those rows that sort of cut, and I don't even really know what was underneath. You know, sometimes it's something bubbling underneath.
Yeah, yeah.
But we had, and I completely lost my temper, which I never do, and I had to storm out and walk the dog. But I did it in front of my daughter, which I'm really upset about. And she was really, she was quite philosophically the end. But I sort of stormed out of the house to walk the dog and slammed the gate and actually broke the gate as I was slamming the gate. So it was a very Pyrrhic victory, because I now have to try and mend this gate that I can't mend.
You can't even mow a fucking lawn. How can I mend a gate?
That was a sort of disaster. But it's sort of weird that that's, And it's, and we, me and my wife realise, because we never really are, you know, had proper arguments before, but it's only when we're tired. And we're both exhausted, and then you just lose all perspective.
Yeah.
And often it's about nothing. And usually it's about me trying to say to my wife, you're doing something great, and, you know, you've got to believe in yourself. And she'll take that as a negative. And that'll somehow turn into an argument. If she's, if she's put herself down, you know, you mustn't put yourself down, and then that will be an argument, because I'm trying to tell her that she's better than she thinks she is.
And that,
you can't win, can you?
Great.
Yeah. It can't win, it isn't. You still managed to turn it into an argument.
Oh, well, there we go.
I know. Good. It's the end of the podcast. Good. Yes.
Good. Good. It's finished. Thank God.
Well, what would you like to flog to our listeners, Richard?
Well, listen to my podcast, which is the Leicester Square Theatre podcast. You can buy my book, Emergency Questions, whatever it's called.
Yes.
I've got a new DVD out called Oh Frig, I'm 50, which is the thing.
From your lovely poster with your balloons.
If you go to gofasterstripe.com, you can buy lots of my shows on downloading DVD if you're old and like DVDs.
As anyone says, always says physical media.
I abandoned physical media in 2009, so I won't be buying your, what is it, DVD?
A DVD. Yeah, it's on Netflix.
Crazy.
There you go. And what are you on Twitter and the other things?
Yeah, at Herring1967. Usually Herring1967 will get you into most of my things.
Just you'll Google
find,
it.
You'll find
Google
me. You'll
Richard
find me.
Herrings and yes. see what
Richard
you
Herrings.
Find.
At Not A Young Dad. It's new. Monica. Of course, you can find us at Scummy Mummies and all the things.
That's
and our
right.
book is
still in print.
Still in print.
Yes, I think so. Currently.
Yes.
Today.
I bet it's on Kindle as well, isn't it?
Yes.
It is. Yeah.
Always on be on Kindle. Always be on Kindle.
Always on Kindle.
Well, yeah. Until the apocalypse, of course, which is coming soon,
true,
as I perceive it. So there we are. Yes, and we're doing live shows, as always, up and down the country.
Absolutely. Go to scummymummies.com for all those details. And do rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast. And perhaps Richard's
yeah,
too.
Yeah, you know, if you like, I don't care.
Go on.
Yeah, he doesn't.
He does quite a good podcast. You should listen to it. It's excellent.
Thank you very much,
thank
Richard
you.
Herrings, for coming on our podcast.
Hooray, thank you for having me. It was lovely.
Thank you for listening. Until next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And then I just had to tell him because it became apparent that I was still sitting there with bits of wood falling over and, yeah.
Oh,
but,
no.
You know, but still.
There's a man at the door.
Yeah.
We're just doing a podcast.
Yes, I know. I don't want to interrupt.
Okay.
But you have.
Yeah. And yet you stood there like a ghost.
Okay, we story.
You can say it. You can say that one.
You allowed me to interrupt. Interruption then, surely.
Mid-sentence, really, I'm choice. So.
Who is this guy on our podcast? Yeah. What's your name?
Carson.
Hi, Carson.
He's from Avalon. He was. He looks after me.
Oh, does he?
Yeah. he had some women being mean to me, and then he came to get you.
Exactly. Oh. I went from the other side of the pond. I kept sprinting. That's why my glasses are fogging up.
Oh.
You can't see that at home.
Oh, nice to meet you, Carson.
Nice to meet you too.
Oh, go now.
That's how you speak to an agent, Ellie. Get out.
It's about six.
He looks nice, though.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.